to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important and stressful life experiences. It's not an experience to be undertaken by yourself or left in the hands of a rank amateur. David Carr of Monopoly Realty takes the stress out of your real estate experience while you are secure in the knowledge that a true real estate professional is looking after your transaction. David Carr of Monopoly Realty can be reached at 230-6129. One more time, that's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. Gentlemen, in an effort to get the lackadaisical Winnipeg Jets power play on track,
yep,
they made a formation change this week, and we'll talk about that for the next 10 or so minutes. They finally, you know, listened to what a number of fans have been clamoring for, really since the Jets returned to Winnipeg, and that's Dustin Byfuglien in front of the net. So the new revised number one power play unit had Dustin Byfuglien sort of in the slot in front of the net, and Olli Jokinen up at the point with Zach Bogosian. First and foremost, Richard, you spoke about it briefly earlier. You don't like this formation.
No.
Ezzy, you are in favor of it. Have at it, boys.
I gotta say though, I'm not all in favor of it permanently. I like giving different looks. But Richie, here,
why don't
you go first?
Richie, why don't you
go first? Then I'll rebut.
Break it down how they set up, and then talk about the pros and the cons of it.
I didn't want to break it down how they set up, Drew. I want to just talk about Byfuglien in front.
Okay.
And they say, oh, Byfuglien is playing in front. That's what he did in Chicago when they went to the Cup, and that's going to be a key. He's such a big body. Okay, he's a big body. We acknowledge that. You know, in Chicago, you had Duncan Keith and Brian Campbell, two of the most talented defensemen in the National Hockey League offensively, even Brent Seabrook, who's a little bit more limited offensively, but still very good. Those are your appointment. Okay?
Yeah.
Not only Jokinen.
Hold on.
Hold on. Another thing.
Yeah.
You know, Chicago, you had an embarrassment of riches. The problem with putting Byfuglien in front, oh, he's a big body, the goalie can't see. It's like, okay. And I realize he has skill. It's like, then put another big body in front. Dustin Byfuglien is your most skilled puck-on-stick player. Meaning, he's a great passer. He's got a bomb of a shot. So the shot's gone.
Yep.
And aside from Bogosian back there, I know Postma in the second unit, it takes a little longer to get it off, but Bogosian, good shot, doesn't hit the net all the time.
Yeah.
Byfuglien.
The new age Freddie Olsen.
Yeah, that's true. Used to have the same number, but Byfuglien has the big shot. He's intimidating. He's a great passer.
Yep.
But also, he is able to rush the puck up the ice, and when he has the puck on his stick is when he creates, and when he's moving in the offensive zone, going down the right side, down the right wing, he opens up lanes. He draws people to him. He's a puck-on-stick player. And he can catch and shoot, too.
When you say puck-on-stick, that you're saying he's most dangerous and he's most effective when he's in control of the puck.
Exactly. And he's so hard to get it off of. So his greatest strength, to me, isn't being utilized. You're throwing him in front. Now, your best puck-handling defenseman is not handling the puck, and you have his big body in front to screen the goalie. No. Not in favor of that at all. I don't think that's the path to success. I don't think Jokinen's a good enough passer to be at the point like that. Even Bogosian, I don't think he's a good enough passer. I mean, I think you're limited in terms of puck movement on the back end there. Then you're going to throw whoever, maybe Hainsey and Postma in your second unit. I mean, your points are really weak. You throw Byfuglien out there for a minute 30 on the point because you don't have to skate as much. That would be my suggestion, especially with Enstrom's injury. But I think Byfuglien needs to have the puck on his stick. I don't like him in front. I think that's wasting his talent. I don't like it at all.
You're passionate about this, Richie. I like it. You know what? I can't disagree with a lot of your statements. I think it's good as a bit of a change. I don't think that Byfuglien should be in front of the net as a strategy for the rest of the season or on a night in and night out basis. I think, you know, simply put, he does create problems for defensemen in front of the net, and once again, I can't disagree. I mean, you take him away from the point, and you're lacking your best shot. Even though I thought at times against Carolina, you know, you could see that they were setting up Bogosian, and you just want him to hit the net more, and you know, you can tell that his shot is improving. So I like it as a change, but I think that, if anything, you'd like to see Buff in front of the net and then move around and back to the point kind of for the second half of the power play. So I think that it's not something I hope that they're going to do going forward night in and night out, but I do like it because I do think he can cause problems just based on pure size. And I know, Richie, that they've got other guys that are big. You can put Antropov in front of the net, or even Jokinen is a big guy, but he's not as physical. But I think it can work. It's almost like it's an element that you can use, but I think they were using it a little bit too much against Carolina.
Yeah, you know, again, back to the Chicago issue. Chicago and Buffalo played more forward there than defense, obviously. But when you're thinking, okay, do I want Buffalo holding the puck, or do I want Campbell, or do I want Keith holding it? It's a tough decision, guys. Here, it's not a tough decision. First of all, Buffalo's elevated his game to the next level since that time, especially puck carrying and his confidence. And to me, the power play goes through Buff, and taking the puck, putting him in front, makes the power play go through other players who, to me, aren't as capable as Buffalo is. And you want to, I think a key to coaching is putting players in the position to succeed, is realizing players' strengths and players' weaknesses and playing to those strengths and trying to avoid those weaknesses. And I think, sure, you play to the strength of his size, but his bigger strength, his most important asset and elements to his game are his offensive creativity. He has a great mind for the game, guys. He sees the ice better than any jet, in my opinion. He sees the ice better than any jet on the ice. And you're taking all that creativity away, and you're taking away the big shot, which generally draws a forward up more to cover him in the box on the penalty kill, which thereby leaves a bigger seam for cross-ice passes. I just don't see it working. I would hope that they don't go back to it today, and that the experiment with Buffalo, as Eddie says, if they want to toss it in once in a while to throw another team off, that's fine. But on a consistent basis, I'm absolutely opposed to it.
On a consistent basis, if they went for it, is it a sign of somewhat desperation, in your opinion? Are they getting to the point? Maybe let me rephrase it. Are they getting to the point where they're almost out of answers for what ails this power play?
They shouldn't be. I mean, you know, Claude Noel and Perry Pern and the entire coaching staff, that's their job, is to get the power play going.
Yeah, but so far it isn't.
No, I know. But, I mean, this is not a panacea, right? So, I mean, they're obviously, they're trying things, but you got to get other guys going. And I think Richie would agree that Bufflin is not a guy that needs to get going. He's been there the whole year blasting the puck from the point. It's other guys that have to get going. Yeah. And I think, again, Richie would agree that the main reason, you know, there's a lot of strategy involved, you know, and we've broken it down. We'll continue to break down power plays and penalty kill because I think, you know, people, you know, it's simple. But let's put it this way. You know, scoring, it can be as simple as you want to make it, or it can be as complex as you want to make it. And in power play, it's a little bit different. It's not just scoring off of the rush. And the thing with the Jets is, you know, they have a lot of guys that aren't go-to guys on the power play. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're talking about, Richie. Bufflin is a go-to guy. First power play unit, there's no doubt Bufflin's going to be out there. And, you know, for the most part, you're going to see Ladd, Little, and Wheeler out there. But, you know, they're not the best power play guys. They're not.
Also, one other point I think to take into account is Buffon can be injury-prone at times, and he's going to take a beating in front of the net. Why would you subject him to that?
Yeah, it's another good point.
Should the Jets be maybe looking at a four... Are the Jets in a position where they could look at a four-forward, one-defenseman power play setup that we see a lot of other teams utilizing? Perhaps as a means to get Evander Kane some more power play ice time, in fact.
Well, the question that I have for you is who's the forward?
Well, I'll flip it back at you. Do the Jets have any forwards on their roster who can play the point on a power play and do so effectively, in your opinion?
I really don't think so, Drew. I mean, just go through the lines. I mean, Wheeler's not a kind of guy who would play that role. Little, definitely not. Neither would Ladd. So then you get to Kane. He's not a good enough passer to play the
Kane
point.
Kane wants the puck on a stick, and he's a shooter. Not him.
Not a good enough passer. Bermistrov would just be turning that puck over the blue line, left, right, and center. The guys like Mietinen, Wellwood doesn't shoot well enough to do it. Then you go to the, you know, Slater, no. Thorburn, no. Those guys, no. You want Antropov back there, he turns the puck over. He can't skate back fast enough to cut it off. So who else are you looking at? I mean, there really isn't much. You're looking at...
Well, so the guy, I mean, obviously the guy you want at the point is your best setup guy.
Yep.
You know, if you're going to put a forward back there,
and he has to have a shot,
right? So is Wheeler just? I mean, he's your best passer on the team.
Wheeler like needs a lot of time to get something done, though. You know what I mean? And he's not a great just one time shooter. I don't see him in that role. I think he needs to skate a little bit and move around. That's not, to me, it's not something that'll be his skill. Jokinen's a little bit better on the half boards than on the top. And I don't love his passing ability either from that point. So I don't think the Jets, and the Jets have a strength in terms of defense when you can move the puck. So I think you work to that strength and you don't work towards a weakness that you have up front.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to start breaking down the Jets-Flyers game, which will take place at 12 noon live here on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program is brought to you by our good friends at the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada, with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates? For more information, contact the CGA Association of Manitoba at cga-manitoba.org or give them a call at 204-477-1256. The CGA Association of Manitoba, we see more than numbers. Gentlemen, Jets Flyers, in slightly more than 4 hours time, will be opening a face-off here on TSN 1290 and TSN Jets. We saw the Flyers about a week ago. I believe it was a week, 10 days ago, where the Flyers came into Winnipeg and defeated the Jets in a lackadaisical performance by the home team. The Flyers were ripe for the picking at that point, and the Jets couldn't take advantage of them. Obviously going to be some lineup changes for the Flyers. Matt Reed is out of the lineup. He's injured, out for the next 4 to 6 weeks. Scotty Hartnell still injured for the Flyers. He's going to be out of the lineup. But they do get Sean Couturier back in the lineup, you know, as opposed to the game in Winnipeg where he was sent home with the flu. What's the key when you're looking at the forward groups for the Jets to win this game? Which individual player has to step up for the Jets today?
I think, honestly, Drew, it's Jokinen. When you're talking about players who need to step up, he needs to be better. Period. End of story.
Yeah, Olli Jokinen, again, and we've talked about this for a few weeks now, is a guy that definitely needs to step up. The Philadelphia Flyers are still a good hockey team, and, you know, it's nice that they get Couturier back. But they're a physical team. And there's a lot of guys that can hurt you. Wayne Simmonds is a guy that I really like, and he's playing really well. Voracek is a guy that really burned the Jets when they were here less than 2 weeks ago. And the Jets cannot afford to get into a situation where they start slowly, because the Philadelphia Flyers, they just dropped a game to the Florida Panthers, 5-2. Brizgalov was pulled, and he was extremely unhappy. You saw the highlights. He was breaking a stick as he went off the ice. And he's expected to start tonight, and he's struggled, you know, back and forth, as the team has, Richie. You know, they're only a point ahead of the Jets right now. But, you know, the Jets, 5-on-5 against the Philadelphia Flyers, even with some of the injuries on the back end, I think the Flyers are a better team. They're deeper on forward. Mm-hmm. You know, Claude Giroux is a guy that, you know, nobody's really talking about this year, and he's struggled big time. But this is a guy that was a Hart Trophy candidate. You go up and down the lineup, and you know, there's a lot of forwards that can burn you. So a guy like Olli Jokinen is going to have to give the Jets secondary scoring. And, you know, they're going to have to, you know, step up in the absence of Enstrom, and, you know, Redmond's still out. So, you know, they're going to have to play another solid road game.
The key to this game, I think, is the Jets' ability to handle the Flyers below the hash marks. And I say that because of the Flyers' skating ability and size. I say that also because if you listen to Ron Hainsey, he said the same thing. and that's, we didn't handle them well enough below the hash marks last game. So that's the key.
Yep.
Now, obviously, Matt Reed is out, and Matt Reed's really impressed me with his progression, but they still have, as he mentioned, a lot of talented forwards and guys who are strong on the puck. Not necessarily the biggest guys. Like, Braden Schenn isn't that tall, but Braden Schenn is built like a truck.
Yep.
And he's hard to get the puck off of. So the Jets have to be able to keep that puck to not get dominant off the boards. And you can, you know, it's a fine line, right, guys? Because you want to keep people to the outside, which is the goal of a good defensive squad. But getting beat below the hash marks, what I mean by that is, you know, having plays, mini plays and curls and ending up on one-timers and offensive opportunities off of work along the boards. And that, you know, we talked about Jokinen being a key in terms of needing to improve his game. But also the center coverage is important. And by that, I mean, you know, how does Brian Little and Olli Jokinen and Burmistrov, how do they help the defensemen handle the tough pressure they're going to get on the forecheck and with sustained in-zone pressure? How do they help the defensemen in terms of defensive coverage? That's very important, too. Those are going to be the two keys. I mean, obviously, you have the wild card, and we'll talk about goaltending later, but if Brizgalov or whoever's starting today, and the Flyers' goaltending can be, you know, can shut you out or let in 9 goals like last year.
Very unpredictable so far. And last year, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, you never know. But the Jets really do have to be communicate defensively and make sure that they have all their assignments, because this is going to be a challenge for them. And these teams that are coming up in the next 3 games are a challenge. And Carolina is a different team as in the way, and Buffalo is too, really. They're more speed teams. They're more transition teams. I mean, Carolina will kill you, boom, boom, pass, goal. But they don't have the same size and in-zone pressure ability that Philadelphia does. And same with Buffalo. Buffalo was more of a speed team, too. They've moved to more of a, you know, Ennis, and they've Gerby, and Vanek's the bigger guy, but plays more of a finesse game, Pominville. You're playing different type of game here today. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Jets are able to deal with that.
Peter Laviolette's team, Drew, they'll dump it in, and they'll just beat you up. They'll purposely do it. Richie mentioned Braden Schenn. Voracek is physical. He doesn't get, credited enough for that, or Wayne Simmonds or Giroux. They'll just dump the puck in, and they'll go back. They'll force you to turn around, and they'll go get it. And you know the Jets are going to have to be quick out of their zone, and they're going to have to be, you know, crisp passing, all that stuff that, you know, wasn't there in the first period against Carolina. Because, you know, it's important. You know, the two victories over Carolina and Buffalo, you got the 2 points. So now that the games are over, it doesn't matter about the start because they got the 4 points. But there were still things that happened in both games. You know, I actually thought the Buffalo win was a better victory.
I would agree with that.
But, there's still things that, basic things that the Jets are still trying to get right. And Philadelphia could, you know, make them pay early if they don't fix those things. And, you know, they're still in a good position that this is a winnable game for them. But, you know, they've got to be better in those areas that they weren't good in the Carolina game.
What do you attribute the Flyers' struggles to so far this year? You look at them, I mean, they're 8-10-1. They've played 3 more games than the Jets. They only have 2 more points. You know, you look at this pretty much the same team that they brought back last year, except for they have some injuries on the back end. Mazaros being the primary guy.
No Matt Carl.
No Matt Carl, which obviously that hurts you on the back end. Is it strictly a defensive shortcoming issue that's causing them so many problems?
I would say so, Richie. I mean, a guy like Claude Giroux hasn't been good, and Hartnell's
and
injured.
And he's picking it up.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. He is picking.
He's got 5 points in his last couple games.
He has been better, and he started off slow when last year he was off to a great start. But the defense isn't very good. The way the Philadelphia Flyers, and they traded Van Riemsdyk to get Schenn to get better because they knew Pronger's career was most likely over. But, you know, this team is going to struggle to make the playoffs if they keep playing the way they're playing right now. And, you know, with, you know, a guy like Bruno Gervais on the back end, he hasn't been very good. And, you know, to me, they're a slower team and not as good defensively as they have been in previous years.
It's tough to succeed in the NHL. We say this all the time. It's tough to succeed in the National Hockey League when you can't get the puck to your forwards.
Yep.
And Timonen and Coburn do that quite well.
Yep.
The other players in the team have points in time when they struggle. Grossman, not a great skater. Schenn, not a great skater. And that goes both ways. The puck doesn't get up to the forwards, but also, you know, you're chasing a lot when you're not skating that well. And it's a combination of a bunch of things. Bruno Gervais, as he mentioned, I think has been a guy like who's been over his head. A guy like Mezros who can skate and move the puck. You know, he's no all-star and he was overpaid by Tampa. But his skill set is just so very important on a Philly squad that relies so much on their forwards to provide that offense. And forwards can't provide offense unless they have the puck. So I think that's a factor, Drew. And I think also, I mean, you know, they do miss Jágr a bit. And that has a trickle-down effect in some other lines, and especially on, I mean, Claude Giroux overall. Some think that Jágr's absence has been a key to his lack of success, as it's been a key to maybe some think it's been a key to Jamie Benn's success in Dallas.
Let me ask you guys this question from a Jets perspective. Mm-hmm. By the sounds of it, Antti Miettinen's back and he's healthy. He's practicing with the team, you know, on a regular basis. He's on the road trip. Do you anticipate any lineup changes for the Jets either today or, you know, tomorrow against New Jersey? And if Antti Miettinen is healthy and his conditioning is up to snuff, does he come in, and is it a clear cut Kyle Wellwood comes out, or is it somebody else?
For me, it's Kyle Wellwood, because first of all, I'd like to be able to see Miettinen with Jokinen, maybe get Jokinen going a bit. But Wellwood, you know what he brings to the table. It's fairly limited, and he hasn't played very well lately at all. I don't think he has any of Noel's confidence. And they're also, obviously, it's a right wing swap, right?
Right.
Right winger for right winger. It's kind of a natural move. To me, it makes the most sense.
Let me follow this one up with a second thought. Given the what happened with Zach Redmond and Antti Miettinen in Carolina this week,
mm-hmm.
and, I mean, there's a great article in today's Winnipeg Free Press. Ed Tate wrote about, you know, really detailed, about the story and you know, how, you know, what life-saving measures were taken. And we know now that obviously tremendously accidental, it was Antti Miettinen's skate blade that cut Zach Redmond. Would this maybe be an opportunity to get Antti Miettinen into the game to maybe take his mind off of what happened in Carolina? Would that be a good opportunity for him to sort of get, I mean, I know you're practicing, but it's not the same as being in game situations and maybe get your mind to focus on hockey as opposed to the near tragedy that unfolded in Carolina?
Yeah, why not? I mean, if you think he's going to be better than Kyle Wellwood, and you think, plus that, you think that he can get his mind off of what happened and, you know, enter the lineup at a good time, I think you definitely explore that.
I think it's a good point, Drew, and I agree with Ezzy. I think it's something that wouldn't hurt for sure. And you know what? A guy like that's got to be having a difficult time.
Yep.
And you put this him, you, yeah. you get him into the team and environment a little bit more. When you're playing, you're more so in the team environment.
Yeah, and this is a guy who's had nothing but bad luck in his time in Winnipeg. I mean, last year was a bit of a write-off in that the adjustment period coming over mid-season and everything else. Then this year he trips over some sticks in the second training camp practice, gives himself a concussion, finally is back to recover from the concussion, you know, comes back and has this happened in Carolina, just an absolute freak incident. And I think that this would be an opportunity today or tomorrow. Get him back into the game. Get his head back around hockey, and you know, I think he can bring more to the table than what Kyle Wellwood's been bringing. And that, I think, which doesn't say a lot for Kyle Wellwood at this point. Anyways, let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day. It's only 8 a.m., but we got 2 hours down, 1 hour to go on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim has been swapped out for producer Remus right now for the last hour of the show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Be sure to send us your Illegal Curve game-winning goal predictions. Predict one Jets player or one Flyers player that you think is going to get the game-winning goal. Send us that prediction. If you're right, you can win some great Illegal Curve merchandise. You can also follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
I'll take Zach Bogosian.
I'm not sure you're eligible.
I'm an eligible bachelor.
Well, that's true. You are an
eligible. Oh, for the contest.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Why not?
Well, you sort of work for Illegal Curve.
Okay. All right.
That's a good answer. You're okay with that answer, then?
We can change that.
That's true. We can change that, and then you can become eligible.
Hold on. What's this pink slip here? Remo, I guess you're switching spots again.
Oh, anyways. We spoke about the Jets forwards last segment. Jets defense, you know, coming up, you know, Jets defense, Flyers defense ahead of today's Jets-Flyers game. Now, it's obviously been a few games now since it was against Philly, if I'm not mistaken, that Tobias Enstrom went out with his injury. So it's been about against Philly or Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh.
So it's been three full games since Toby Enstrom went out with his upper body injury. You know, whatever. pick a body part in the upper body and go with that.
Injured heart.
Okay.
The heart shoulder.
You know, how do you think the Jets? What have been your impressions of the Jets' defense in the week or 8 days since Toby Enstrom went out? And how do you like the Jets' defensive pairings? How do you think that the team has handled the injury?
Well, originally we thought that it was going to be Hainsey with Bufflin, but now what we've seen is Hainsey's actually playing without Bufflin, and Bufflin is playing with Klitsam. I think that, you know, I even though there have been some lapses, I looked to the Buffalo game, and I thought the Jets were pretty good. I mean, they obviously won the game, and they kept the score low, but I thought they played a smart game, and without Enstrom, you're missing that offensive ability, but you know, you're also missing a guy that plays a lot of minutes. That you look at Bogosian, who's still only been back for 3 weeks now, less than 3 weeks actually, and you know he's played really well, and he's a great skater. And he's picking up the minutes. But Klitsam has stepped in for Redmond. Before Redmond was injured, they put Klitsam back into the lineup, and I thought he's probably had his best couple of games. And I think as a group, they're still, you know, when they run into skilled forwards and especially bigger forwards, and that's with or without Enstrom in the lineup, because Postma's not a physical guy, Klitsam's a smaller guy, even though Klitsam is a physical guy. But I think, you know, they've been okay. If I had to give them a grade in these two games, I'd probably give them like a nice B for the way they've played. But you know, you want to see your defense at an A.
Enstrom, obviously, not having him there really does hurt their transition game and their puck movement. But having said that, I think they simplified their game a little bit, and I think that's helpful. And Enstrom, for all his offense this year, was just brutal defensively. I mean, he was giving up just some brutal chances against and cost them a number of goals. So as much as he was giving it to them, he was also taking back some with his defensive play. So I think it's been kind of just a steady. You know, obviously there's some breakdowns, and the Carolina game was a bit of a mess. But overall, I don't think the defense has been as apt to, or susceptible to breakdowns over the past couple of games as they were before that. I mean, they've kept what Boston was at 3 goals, Pittsburgh 3, you know, and you look at what Buffalo 1 and Carolina 3. You got to keep him below 3, mind you, but the defense hasn't looked that bad to me. And you know, you obviously lose a lot of minutes with Enstrom, but keep in mind that Bufflin can be a horse, and Bogosian's certainly a horse, and Hainsey, guys, has logged a lot of minutes. He hasn't looked as good lately as he did early in the season, but he can log minutes. So it's not like these guys aren't capable of doing it. And then you mentioned as he eclipsed him, I thought he did look better and has the past couple games. And, you know, you have Postma has his moments. And I thought he struggled a little bit last game and such, but he can move the puck. He seems to get a little nervous when he gets the puck, but he can move the puck. And you look at that defense overall, and you know, aside from Stewart, all of them are pretty adept at moving the puck fairly well. I mean, Klitsam can move the puck. I mean, he's not great defensively. He's got a nice cannon for a shot, but they can all move the puck fairly well. So, you know, the defense when it's healthy, and I've been watching, you look at the other teams around the league, the defense when it's healthy, it's kind of a shame how bad they are in terms of defensively, because talent-wise, skill-wise, they're very good. And as we said many times in the show, I'd love for them to get a solid left-side defenseman to kind of settle things down for the second pairing. But overall, sometimes I feel like the output of the defense when healthy is not sometimes, all the time. I feel like it's not as good as it should be.
What do you attribute that to? Let me push you on that one a little bit more. I mean, you know, what do you attribute that to? The Jets, I mean, you know, for all that you can say about the team, you know, in the organization, they do seem to be okay on the defensive side of things in terms of the talent they have on the back end for the most part.
Now they need another lockdown guy.
Another guy.
I think at times these guys get a little bit more obsessed with the offensive side of the game than they need to be. I mean, you know,
I agree.
Enstrom's got a point a game before he gets hurt, but that's to me at
a
cost.
He wasn't good defensively.
Yeah, and I think Bufflin is susceptible to that as well.
Yep.
It's a defensive conscience. I think part of it's the forwards helping out, but I think also it's a mindset. It's a mindset more than anything to me, actually, and I think the Jets team doesn't necessarily put defense first and foremost, and that they need to improve at. So maybe Enstrom's injury actually makes this team calm down a little bit. It's not a good thing. You want him back, obviously. But you need to take it for what it is and try to work with what you've got. And what I mean by that, you're simplifying your game. You're saying, okay, we don't have this guy here. We're a little bit weaker on the left side. I mean, that's where the weakness is on the defense. It's left more than right. We're going to line up Stewart, Hainsey, and Klitson. We've got to simplify our game. And I think that's actually served them quite well.
Richie, we talk a lot about line combinations on the show. And when you talk about the defense group, mm-hmm. I think what they've done, and I think that's a good point about Enstrom, and they have simplified it, and maybe it's made them as a group play better. But I think what you've done there with Ron Hainsey, who can play the shutdown minutes, he's not, you know, we're not going to confuse him for Shea Weber.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's playing those minutes. And I think you've put Hainsey and Bogosian together as opposed to putting Hainsey and Byfuglien together. And now that's become the number one pairing. And I think, you know, you mentioned Mark Stewart, and I think he does deserve a lot of credit for the way he played in Buffalo and against Carolina. You know, that's where you want him. Mark Stewart is a third pairing defenseman, and you're going to put him on the penalty kill. He's a physical guy. He's always going to be at the top of the stats chart as far as hits go and as far as block shots go. He sacrifices his body, and you've put him with Postma, who's more of an offensive guy and not the most physical guy. And I think these pairings are really good. And if you look at without Enstrom in the lineup, that's what you're going to have to do. You can't. It's not just a matter of, okay, who are you going to put on with Byfuglien on the top pair? Well, Byfuglien's actually on the second pairing now with Grant Klitson. So that's actually, you know, a thing that I think Claude Noel's got right, and it's translated into two victories. But I know Richie Drew asked us about the Jets D, and there's a lot of talent there. But, you know, you have, for the most part, a lot of offensive defensemen. Ron Hainsey, if you defensemen are kind of classic. It's almost easier to classify a defenseman in a way. Sure, there are guys like Drew Doughty who are good offensively and defensively and all that. But that's really what you have as far as the Jets go. I mean, you have a team that they're not necessarily not good skaters or not physical enough or this or that. It's that you kind of have too many of the same guy. And Paul Postma, mm-hmm. sure, he's young, he's 25, and he's going to get better defensively. But you can't expect Paul Postma to be going out there and shutting down top lines in the Eastern Conference. You just can't.
That's right. He's not a shutdown guy.
What about the Flyers' defense? Flip it around. Look at their defense. Now, we spoke about they don't have Matt Carl. They lost him in the offseason.
Yep.
Andre Mazaros is still injured. He hasn't played a game this season. You know, I think it's probably been... It hasn't been as horrendous as some people thought it might be. Luke Shen has been okay with for them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, where can the Jets take advantage of the Flyers' defense? And who should they target in this game that they didn't target 10 days ago when they first played?
Well, that's a good question, Drew. I think you use the Jets need to be able to utilize their speed. A guy like Blake Wheeler utilizing speed against a guy like Nicholas Grossman. I think that's the kind of thing they've cut. Grossman and Shen are guys, I know they play different sides, but you know Wheeler will be faced up more against a guy like Grossman if that's the matchup the Flyers go for, which probably won't, but the Jets might want to get there. You take advantage of the speed there. You take advantage of the speed against a guy like Shen. You take advantage of size against a guy like Kimmo Tiimonen. So there's options there. I mean, Coburn is arguably your best all-around defenseman, although Tiimonen may very well be that. But after that, I mean, after Tiimonen and Coburn, Drew, they really drop off.
Yep.
And so, you know, is it a guy, like on the back end of this squad, I mean, is it Bruno Gervais you're working on? Yeah, I mean, Bruno Gervais is not very good. Is it Erik Gustafsson? I mean, you're looking at weak defense core guys. That's the key is really to take advantage of the weaknesses. You know, Gervais isn't that big. He makes turnovers. You take advantage of your size against him. You take advantage of speed against a guy like Shen. And those are the pieces. This is not a Philly team that has Pronger. Last year they came in here at the beginning of the season with Tiimonen, Coburn, Pronger, and Carl. Night and day. Night and day.
Yeah.
That's the weakness of this squad. It's the defense. And if you don't take advantage of it by using your size and speed, then... You're causing your own problems.
Before we go to break, this segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing proper protective equipment is a must. A proper-fitting, custom-made mouthguard designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center is an essential part of your protection. In two short appointments, you can get your own custom-fitted mouthguard and give yourself peace-of-mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. One more time, Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Phil Hanley at Rumors Tonight, the 7:45 show, is already sold out. There are tickets available for the 10:30 show. Next week, Rob Schneider in town Wednesday through Sunday. There are tickets only available for the late night Wednesday show. The 10:30 Wednesday show is the only show with tickets available. Everything else is sold out. So you can give Rumors a call at 204-488-4520 or online at www.rumorscomedyclub.com. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. We are breaking down the Jets-Flyers game, which gets underway on this fine radio station at 12 noon this afternoon. Following us, Hustler and Lawless for 2 hours of Hustler and Lawless. Funny how that works out. And then Rick Ralph and the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 11 a.m. It is Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day. Gentlemen, we've done the
Sorry, Drew. Just keep talking because I'm about to fall asleep.
We've done the defense. We've done the forwards. The goaltenders for tonight's or this afternoon's contest. We are expecting Andre Pavlik in net for the Winnipeg Jets. I don't see any reason why it would be, I guess it would be Eddie Pasquale over Al Montoya still, because Montoya is still on the injured list, I guess. So we wouldn't expect it to be anybody but Pavlik. For the Flyers, they had an off day yesterday. Strictly a guess, so we don't know this for sure.
I don't think Bush is going to be in net today.
Strictly a guess, it's that it's Ilya Bryzgalov. He got pulled from the Flyers last game on Thursday against the Florida Panthers. So much like when the Panthers, much like when the Flyers played in Winnipeg last week after Bryzgalov got pulled against the Toronto Maple Leafs, they came back with him. We would expect, and this is strictly a guess, as I mentioned, that it's likely to be Ilya Bryzgalov in the net for the Florida for the Philadelphia Flyers this afternoon. Now, he was very good when the Jets play when the Jets and the Flyers met about 10 days ago. And he's not the Ilya Bryzgalov from last season. He's got more confidence, he's playing better. What are his weaknesses? Where can the Jets target on Ilya Bryzgalov? Or is it simple, is there, one glaring weakness that stands out more than any other in the course of his game?
Well, Richie, Drew mentioned that, Ilya Bryzgalov was good about 10 days ago in Winnipeg. And, the Jets weren't very good, but he was good when he needed to be. I don't know if there's necessarily one good weakness, one weakness that they can exploit. I mean, people think of Ilya Bryzgalov, and he was a really good goaltender with Phoenix and Anaheim. And he has moments, and you could say that he is a little bit mentally weak, and I think he's gotten better. But he's a good athletic goaltender, and he struggles at times. And right now, the Philadelphia Flyers defense is struggling, and I think he is struggling with them, and he's trying to find his game. But I'm not going to give a prediction right now, but I wouldn't be surprised if Ilya Bryzgalov tightens up and doesn't let in too many goals tonight, which means the Jets are, again, going to have to be really good defensively and take advantage of their opportunities offensively. But I don't know if Richie might have one, but I don't know if there's necessarily one weakness with Bryzgalov, because he's flexible, he's active, he's aggressive. I don't know if necessarily they're going to be able to take advantage of that. But, you know, right now, he you could say he's vulnerable based on the fact he was pulled a couple nights ago. Maybe.
I agree with Ezzy that the basic point is that he's just between the head, between his ears is the biggest issue in what you're going to get. At times, I think he gets a little bit aggressive, and by that, isn't square to the puck. I think if people watch the Pittsburgh game, that would be a prime example of it. Sometimes the puck goes through him. He's not on his angles. But overall, he's a, you know you say getting to a player early?
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's somewhat of a cliche, but not really, because there's certain goalies, you know, you score on Patrick Waugh back in the day, and first goal early, he didn't care. It was Patrick Waugh.
Yep.
But Brzgalov, you get to him early. It's his confidence is that weak.
Yep.
So you get a goal early, you start questions in his mind, maybe right. You get two. It can open the floodgates sometimes.
Whereas if he makes that big save early, he feeds off of that.
Yep. Exactly right. So I think it's the most, you know, forget everything else. It's really between his ears whether or not he can get the job done.
Okay, then let's flip this around to the Jets. We've discussed, you know, a couple times throughout the show so far that Andrei Pavlik is playing better than he had been playing,
yep.
Towards the start of the season. You know, the last few games have been better for Andrei Pavlik. What do you think has changed in Pavlik's game that has, you know, resulted in his improved play? Or is it just sort of an overall more attention to defense by the team?
Breaking down goalies is so difficult. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert. I don't have a clue. You know, I don't have a clue about goalies.
Yeah.
Pavlik,
I don't think goalies do either.
Pavlik, to me, he looks more confident right now. I think when goalies are more confident, they're more aggressive.
Yep.
They'll step out a half step further because of their angles, and they're not worried they're going to be beat. Is it a matter of the team? You know, is it also a matter of the Jets maybe controlling the play a little more? I think that's a factor as well. But, and I think also, Drew, the point is I don't think the level that Pavlik was playing at up to the prior to the past few games is actually his true talent level. So I think it's a little bit more of getting back to what he really is.
And I didn't think Pavlik played that well, particularly that poorly in any of the losses to Pittsburgh or Philadelphia or Boston at home last week. And,
I would agree with that.
You know, people looked at that Brad Marchand goal that they scored in the power play where he took the pass from Bergeron and cut through the middle and went to his backhand. I didn't really think it was a goal that was a hard save for Pavlik. But, you know, Richie, it's funny. You know, you talk about goaltenders, and Pavlik has the ability to steal games. I think, you know, it would be a stretch to call him a top five or even top 10 goal in the NHL right now.
Yeah, no.
But he's definitely a number one goaltender in the NHL. I think he is, and he's proven that. You know, I think he's probably benefited from going on the road, and those losses probably, you know, get to him, and he talked about that after some of the losses at home that, you know, they had to be better, and he wasn't happy with the way he was personally playing. And, you know, this bodes well going forward that he's got some wins and he's getting confidence. And, you know, you mentioned Eddie Pasquale earlier. You can't put him in a game against the Philadelphia Flyers when out of a playoff spot. You just can't put him in. If Montoya is out for 2-3 more weeks, yeah, they're not going to play. I shouldn't say that. I mean, Claude Noel and the coaching staff makes the decision. But I don't think Pavlik is going to play 12, 14 games in a row. At some point, they'll probably look to put Pasquale in. But I don't think this road trip is probably the best time to do it. I think he would be too vulnerable. And Pavlik is playing well. That's the most important thing. Pavlik's playing well, so ride him.
We said on one of our post-game podcasts that Pavlik hadn't stolen a game for the Jets, in my opinion. And
you might have done that against Carolina.
I don't know. Maybe not, Ezzy, but, you know, and against Buffalo, obviously, you know, you let in one goal. He made some big saves in the Buffalo game.
Yep.
Especially sort of the last 10 minutes of that third period.
The Jets are not good enough as currently constructed to win games without him stealing a couple for them. And if up to this point, you could argue if he's done it maybe once, twice maximum. He has the ability to do it. And if he can, they can get that shot at the playoffs and their division. If he doesn't and he plays run in the mill or poor goaltending like he has for the most of this year, the Jets don't have a shot.
No.
You look at the Jets' upcoming schedule, and you mentioned, you know, when does Pavlik get a break?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you know, I don't think you give him a break today or tomorrow.
No. Well, if Montoya was there, you probably would give him tomorrow. But Montoya isn't there, so they're not going to play Pasquale, as he mentioned.
Right.
So you're not really giving him a break until Montoya is back, to me.
Right. And looking at the schedule, that might be, you know, not next week, but the week after. They play Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Florida, Tampa, Florida. you know, one of those games, maybe that second Florida game on the Friday, March the 8th, is where you sort of have it on the calendar as being a Al Montoya game or something along those lines. But from, like you said, he's their best goaltender, and it's not even a close comparison. You have to ride him because, you know, he has to play at the same level that he's been playing, you know, or at the sort of the level he played the last two games, or even better, for this team to have a viable shot at the playoffs.
Yeah, and you know what, you know, I always look at Pavlik with you know, the glass half full, and as I
you look at this entire team with the glass half full, but that's part of your charm.
Well, yeah, you know, we're you know, in Winnipeg, so that's a reason. But he's the type of guy. You know what I love about Pavlik is that he really cares, and he takes goals that he lets in personally, and he doesn't you know, take it out on anyone, and he's pretty vocal about himself that he wants to be better, and you can tell that he knows he wants to be better, and he didn't have a good experience during the lockout, and he hasn't got the start that he's wanted to, and I think that as a goaltender that's important. And you know, Briz, we make fun of him. I love Briz. I think he's, you know, he's a funny guy, you know, in the media, Richie, but you know, Brizgalov as a veteran goaltender, I think he's 31 now. Coming off the ice and breaking your stick as a veteran goaltender, I mean, come on. I mean, you know, if you're not playing well, sit on the bench and get back out there for the next game. And I think at times, Brizgalov's head isn't in it, like we talked about. And Pavlik, you don't see that. I mean, he has a bad game. Next game, he tries to be better, and he has been better. And, you know, that's the most important thing.
I don't mind the exhibiting passion as he with Brizgalov. He's a little more temperamental, I would agree.
Yep.
I think also there's more pressure on a goaltender in Philly than there is here.
Well, especially, I mean, Philly and goaltender. Yeah. Philly is where goaltenders
Well, they're still
go to
looking
die.
For the next Ron Hextall, so.
Well, yeah. I mean, go back even before that. I mean, Pelle Lindbergh, probably. Yeah. I mean, it's been that long in Philly. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to go to Philly and talk to our good friend Anthony Sanfilippo. He writes for PhiladelphiaFlyers.com. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on your home for the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend who requested his very own theme music, Anthony Sanfilippo. Anthony, good morning. How are you?
The Rocky theme, boys.
Well,
the Rocky theme.
You got to give us a little bit more advance warning.
Remus had advance warning.
Yeah, well, next time we'll get some, you know, we'll get a lyricist in. We'll get some lyrics made to the music. Yep. You know, we have to go, you know, with the basic, obvious Philadelphia, you know, Rocky theme tie-in.
Absolutely. I mean, we're only known for our fake athletes, right, in Philadelphia, right?
Well, also,
we have a statue of Rocky down here, so why not, right?
Yeah, and I mean, the other alternative was the sound of us all eating cheesesteaks, and nobody wants to hear that on radio.
But you know what? It wouldn't surprise me if you boys were all eating cheesesteaks at this hour. After last night, right?
Yeah. It was bright and early this morning, let me tell you. You know, obviously, Jets Flyers meet again today. Second time in about 10 days that the two sides meet. You know, last time the Jets and the Flyers met, it was right after the Flyers were, you know, blown out in Toronto the night before. You know, Brizgalov got pulled, and then two nights ago, the Flyers got blown out on home ice against the Florida Panthers. Brizgalov got pulled. You know, is this an angry Flyers team that's coming to the rink today?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure. No, I wouldn't call them angry. I think that there was a difference between the two games. I think that they were angry coming out of Toronto because they really just did not play well, and that was just a bad effort by them. And so they were angry coming into Winnipeg to play the Jets. I think the team that lost to Florida was just exhausted. You know, they had played the night before. I don't know. I'm sure you guys saw at least the highlights, if not watched the game.
Yeah.
What might have been one of, you know, arguably the best game in the NHL this year, that 6-5 victory over the Penguins, was just intense. It had, you know, a real playoff feel, playoff atmosphere, a lot of emotion and energy that was brought to to that game, and then to turn around less than 24 hours later and play a game against a Florida team that was just sitting in Philadelphia waiting for you to get there, they had nothing. They had no legs. They had no energy. They had nothing left. I mean, it's not that they didn't try. I mean, you could see the effort. You could see that they were trying to generate some stuff, but they got behind so quick and so fast that there was really never a chance of them coming back against Florida. So I think that they were two different situations. Like, you talked to the players after that game in Toronto, when I was in that locker room with the players after the Toronto loss, they were really mad at themselves that they played the way they played. Talked to the players after that Florida game the other night, and they were like, you know what, maybe you chalk this one up as a mulligan, because we had nothing. We had no energy. We tried. We had nothing. So I think it's going to be a different team today than it was the last time against Winnipeg. But that said, they're not in a position where they can sit there and say, well, we can afford to lose another game. They have to go out there and try and win. I just don't think it's the same mindset of, all right, we're mad at ourselves. We better go out and play a better game. They just needed some rest.
Anthony, look at the Flyers roster, and you see them play in person. I guess the question that comes to my mind is what is this team? Is this the team that, when motivated, can take on a team like Pittsburgh or any team in the Eastern Conference? Or is this a team that only really can turn it on once in a while and really isn't as good as last year's squad?
I think it's probably more the latter than the former. But that said, the way that the Flyers are constructed, if they find their way into the playoffs, they're a dangerous team. In a lot of ways, like, and I'm not going to say that they would win the Stanley Cup, but in a lot of ways, like Los Angeles was last year, mm-hmm. in the sense that they were not very good in the regular season. They struggled to score. They actually fired their coach and changed coaches. And it's not like the coaching change all of a sudden they turned it around and got better. They were a little bit better, but not fantastic. They barely made it in, and then all of a sudden it was like, all right, we're in the playoffs. And then they went on the run and just did what they did. I think the Flyers are a similar kind of team, where they're playoff tested. They know how to play in tight games, intense games. They know how to ramp up that energy when they need to. But they have tendencies to have lulls during this regular season, but they're not as talented as they were last year. So if they can find their way in, they could be dangerous. But the hard part is going to be finding their way in. I think that's the makeup of this team right now.
Anthony, Matt Reed is out of the lineup for 4 to 6 weeks now.
Yeah.
And as you reported earlier this week, Scotty Hartnell's been cleared for practice, but he's still a little ways away. But we know that Sean Couturier is going to come back in the lineup. What are the changes that the Flyers are going to make for this afternoon's game against the Jets based on Reed's injury and Couturier being back?
Yeah, I don't think that there's much different than what you saw against Florida. I think the lineup you saw against the Panthers is probably what you're going to see today, which basically Ty McGinn, who it was kind of been a little bit of a surprise story this year for the Flyers. He was a fifth-round draft pick a couple years back and never really looked at as a real NHL-caliber player. Has really worked his way up through the system pretty quickly and is now going to be back in the lineup again. I think he was a scratch in Winnipeg. He might have been. I forget if that was the game he was a scratch or not. But he's going to play on that top line with Claude Giroux and Jake Voracek, who's been unconscious. He's got 8 points in his last three games. So that's where you'll see McGinn replace Reed. Couturier has been back the last couple games. Actually, the Pittsburgh game played really, really well. Really hounded Malkin the whole time. Malkin did score, but it was a power play goal. Other than that, he was almost invisible because Couturier did such a nice job. He's centering a third line with Max Talbot and Mike Knuble, kind of a really good, grinded-out, defensive-minded line. So that line's in place. And then your second line that they put back together after the Winnipeg game, I believe, up in Winnipeg, it was Danny Briere on the left with Braden Shen in the middle and Wayne Simmonds on the right. That was a line that had a lot of success together at the end of last season in the playoffs. They're back together now as well. So, and then your fourth line is just Fedotenko centering Ronaldo and Harry Zolnarchuk, who's a speedy winger that they called up from the Phantom. So that's kind of what you're going to see today. I think Hartnell could be back Monday against Toronto, probably more likely Wednesday against Washington. But losing Matt Reed is a big-time loss for this team because he was their best sniper on the team. He had led the team in goals before he got hurt with 7. And it's a shame that he's going to be out. And it's going to be closer to 6 weeks than it is going to be 4 because he has multiple muscle tears there. So that's a big-time loss, and they're going to have to figure out a way to replace him in the lineup.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. We're talking to Anthony Sanfilippo. He covers the Philadelphia Flyers for PhiladelphiaFlyers.com. Anthony, you mentioned Jakub Voracek, 8 points in his last three games. He's averaging a point a game this year, 19 games played, 19 points. Is he sort of just coming into his own as a forward, or is this just sort of, is this sort of the peak of his talents, or is he just sort of scratching the surface of what he can turn into as a top flight NHL forward?
Yeah, I think it's more that he's just scratching the surface, because if you really go back and look at it, he had a horrible start to last season. They made the big trade for him and the draft pick, which ended up being Couturier. They traded Jeff Carter to Columbus for those guys. And Voracek never really, showed any, here and there you would see good speed, good puck possession, but he doesn't shoot. Yeah, he could pass it, but he doesn't always make the smart pass. But people forgot how young he was at 22 last year. Towards the end of the year, he really started to come on, and in the playoffs he was very good. And then this year he's been really good. If you go back over his last 46 games, he's got 47 points, including the playoffs last year. So you're talking about that being a little bit more than half of a normal season, where he's averaging a point a game or more than a point a game. And I think that you're really starting to see him develop into the player that I think the Flyers envisioned when they traded for him. Still just 23 years old, but, he's playing with Claude Giroux is actually going to make him a better player, and vice versa. Voracek's going to give Giroux the space that he wasn't getting, and we were talking about that when we were when I was up in Winnipeg. It's talking getting the space he wasn't getting before. So I think it's a nice combination to put those two together. And I think Voracek, assuming he stays healthy, every time they put somebody on the top line, it seems they get hurt. But as long as he stays healthy, I think that you're looking at a guy who can average a point a game, at least in the NHL for the rest of the season.
Anthony, this team's defense, to me, is really the Achilles heel. And I know Mezeros isn't yet back. Even if he's there, I guess the question is, do they still need to improve? But how has this defense been getting by thus far, and what's been the biggest strength and the biggest weakness?
Well, the strength of the defense is the fact that they're big. They might be slow and plodding, and they might struggle to get the puck out of their own end on a breakout. But the one thing that they do well is they really take up space, and they don't let shots through. They block a ton of shots. They hit a ton of people. I mean, Luke Shen leads the league in hits. He did last year in Toronto, so that's not a big surprise. But, you watch the way they play, and it's a different style than their defense was even last year. They're much more physical. And so they wear on a team's offense. So that's their strength. I mean, teams don't get a lot of chances. Pittsburgh did. They got a ton of chances against Brizgalov just because the nature of how that game went. It was more of a track meet up and down. But for the most part, teams aren't getting, even Florida didn't get a ton of chances. Their goals came on breakaways. They got behind the defense and scored. So, once a team sets up in the zone, the defense bogs it down. Their weakness, though, is the fact that they are slow and they don't move the puck well. And that's the biggest problem right now. And, Mazaris will help when he comes back. But even, like you said, even that's not the biggest upgrade in the world. I think that if the Flyers really want to make a push for the playoffs and make a run of any kind, that they are going to need to find a solid puck-moving defenseman that might be available via trade here before the April 3rd trade deadline. So that, to me, is their most pressing need. Even though they struggle to score up front, I think that that's probably their more pressing need right now, is a puck-moving defenseman.
Now, Anthony, you mentioned that they need a puck-moving defenseman, and Who would maybe they target? I know that's a tough question to put you on the spot there. And who's maybe a guy in the Philadelphia Flyers system that they would look at moving to acquire that puck moving defenseman?
I don't know who will be available. It kind of depends on what teams feel like they're still in it, and what teams feel like they're out of it. I'll tell you one that I kind of think might be an interesting trade partner could possibly be maybe San Jose. The Sharks feel like they're a little light up front, and they could use a forward. And the Flyers needed a puck moving defenseman, and Dan Boyle's contract is probably one that the Sharks are going to look to shed. I think that you might have a marriage there that could work. It would probably cost the Flyers a decent young player. I mean, not a superstar by any stretch of the imagination, but maybe a decent young player to go back in the other direction. They have some nice young forwards in junior hockey. That's where their depth is. They don't really have them in the minor league system, playing in the AHL. So They would have to look to maybe like a Nick Cousins or a Scott Laughton, who played five games earlier in the season before he got sent back to junior. Somebody like that might have to go in a trade in order to bring in the defenseman that you need. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do. They might also have to trade a little bit of salary, too. So, you know, if there was a partnership there with San Jose, maybe send some salary back the other way as well. The Sharks would take to get that young prospect player in return for the aging veteran defenseman who can still move the puck at least. So, it's really going to come down to ultimately which teams fall off the pace here before April 3rd. I don't think the Flyers are going to jump and make a move right away. I think they're going to try and get by for a little bit longer with what they have and then take stock in where they are some from mid-March and then really make the push at that point if they feel they need to for another player.
Anthony Sanfilippo, he covers the Flyers for PhiladelphiaFlyers.com. Thank you, buddy.
Hey, you know, I talked really long, gave like long answers for you guys. That way you could take quick naps. each take turns getting a little snooze while I was talking. I figured that would help.
We very much appreciate that, Anthony, okay. As always.
Thanks a lot, Anthony.
Enjoy the game,
guys,
bud.
No problem. All right, see ya.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick, GMC Game Day on your home for the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Anthony Sanfilippo for having just joined us. This segment, the final segment of the program, is brought to you by the Elite Sports Injury Clinic. Regardless of your talent level or how it happened, if you suffer pulls, tears, strains, or spasms, Elite Sports Injury Clinic is your destination to get you back to health. Three convenient locations throughout Winnipeg means Elite Sports Injury Clinic is always available. Check them out online at physiowinnipeg.com.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire for this Saturday morning. Veteran forward Matthew Darche literally hung up his skates and in doing so announced his retirement via Twitter TwitPic. He had spent the past month skating and working out with the New Jersey Devils, but was informed recently that he would not be offered a contract this season. Mm-hmm. Darche was an active member of the NHLPA during the CBA negotiations. Another active NHLPA member, Chris Campoli, was not offered an NHL contract and is playing in Switzerland. Do you think that Darche and Campoli were blackballed by NHL clubs for their roles in the CBA negotiations?
Well, that's a juicy little conspiracy theory that Drew's cooking up here. I have no idea. I just watch hockey because I need something to do. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, Matthew Darche, the thing that I liked about Matthew Darche is there are very few NHLers who come through Canadian universities and play in the NHL. Everyone remembers Mike Ridley. Darche went to McGill. First off, little tidbit for those who didn't know that. But as far as Darche and Campoli go, those were guys that both were probably not at the top of the free agent list for most teams, pardon me, Richie.
Mm-hmm.
And to use that as an excuse, that's something that I don't have that knowledge. But as far as I was concerned, Darche was in tough to get a contract. And Campoli is another guy who... He was the 6th-7th defenseman for the Chicago Blackhawks. Uh-huh. Didn't play very well. No. So Campoli, I think, unfortunately didn't get a contract because his days as an NHL defenseman were probably over.
They allowed you in Canadian universities?
Pardon me?
They allowed you into a Canadian university?
In fact, I have a degree, which is a scary thing.
You have two degrees, which is even scarier.
I don't think this has to do with politics, really. I think if you can play at the NHL level and you can help a team, I don't think an owner is going to get in the way of his own personal success, his own team's personal success, because of some kind of vendetta.
Right.
I mean, I just think these guys want to win too badly. And I think Chris Campoli and Matthew Darche, prior to the lockout, were middling 13th, 14th forward and 7th and 8th defenseman.
Yep.
And you know what? Truth be told, a couple of years have gone by, and now they're older,
yep,
mid-range guys who can play for the same amount of money or a little bit, or ask for, you know, they play for the minimum, but what they do is they're stopgaps, because you can really, yep, fill that spot from a younger player at the minimum and probably
cheaper,
not,
yep,
lose that much play, and you develop a guy. So I don't think it is based on that these non-signings are based upon their actions in the labor war. And the truth is, I mean, it's a time.
do we even remember that there was a lockout? I mean, lots of people do. Don't get me wrong. But
I hope
it's time to put the lockout.
I hope people aren't still thinking about the lockout. Put that away. But it's over.
I think the goal is, and then the point is that the owners are focused really on winning now.
Prior to Wednesday night's typically entertaining Flyers-Penguins game, Penguins forward Tanner Glass called Flyers forward Danny Briere one of the dirtiest players in the league, referring to him, and I quote, as undercover dirty. Throughout his career, Briere has been suspended on three separate occasions for a total of 7 games. Do you think Tanner Glass is correct when he refers to Danny Briere as undercover dirty? And as a follow-up question, who is the dirtiest player in the league right now?
Well, that's a tough question. There are some dirty players. Danny Briere, you know, for a small, kind of highly skilled offensive guy, you know, he's been known to, you know, lay a few hits, and some of them's a little bit suspect. Briere in the past has got his stick up and that type of thing. I don't know if he deserves the title of undercover dirty. It's Matt Cook obviously was one of the former dirty players. Right now, I mean, you know, a guy that comes to mind, that even though I like him, Steve Ott can be dirty, Carcillo, but you know, probably those two guys. No, I don't know if I would just say one guy specifically. Burrows can get dirty, but you know, there are a lot of guys. I mean, hockey's a passionate, physical game. There's a lot of guys that do a lot of things on the ice.
Don't cover all your bases there, Izzy. do I think that Briere's dirty? Yeah, I do. Briere's on the cusp there of always kind of pushing the edge. Player who I think is the dirtiest in the league and does well at it is Patrick Kaleta in Buffalo. He draws penalties, but he's dirty.
The latest in our collection of crazy hockey parents is professional life coach Brian O'Reilly, the father of unsigned restricted free agent forward Ryan O'Reilly.
Does he have a Baba O'Reilly?
He might. Brian O'Reilly went on Twitter and sent an email to the Denver Post saying, in short, that the Avalanche do not value high-character players like his son. He ended his lengthy diatribe by saying that his son is, and I quote, intrinsically motivated for excellence.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I don't know what intrinsically motivated for excellence really means, but the question, by speaking out, is Brian O'Reilly doing anything but hurting his son and his reputation in the NHL?
I don't mind this at all. O'Reilly is a character guy, a lot of the intangibles. He brings so many different elements to the table, and his dad's supporting him. And maybe the Avalanche don't think that has value. Maybe they want to pay him strictly based on the point totals that they expect from him. And he's supporting his son, and O'Reilly... it brings a lot of character. Intrinsically motivated to succeed, Drew. I mean, you know, this guy has a drive and a passion to win, and you can't necessarily quantify that. I have no problems with him making this comment.
I think, I don't really either. Ryan O'Reilly wants to get back on the ice. He's not getting a contract from the Colorado Avalanche, and let's be honest, he wants to either get signed or moved. I think his dad is probably trying to help him out with that, speed up the process.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Oh, Richard Pollock, cheers or jeers?
I'm jeering the Edmonton fans who are taking this Taylor Hall hit to be some kind of a demonstration that the team is tough and they're not going to take any. You know, if you want to be tough, hit a guy with your shoulder. And hit a guy clean, or fight a guy, or do something where he's suspecting. Kyle Clutterbuck's a tough guy. Don't take a run at him at the end of a game with a low to me dirty check and then consider yourself, oh, tough and sticking up for your squad. Be a man.
Ezra Ginsberg, cheers or jeers?
I got to cheer, you know, what happened in Carolina. The medical staff for the Winnipeg Jets, I know Lee Stubbs, I've met him before. I think he's the assistant head athletic therapist. And then there was someone else, I forget his name, there's two. And I know that Lee Stubbs went with Zach Redmond to the hospital, but and all others, Anthony Peluso helped out, and the assistant coaches. But, you know, that was a very scary situation. They rushed to his help, got him to the hospital. Looks like he'll make a full recovery. But, you know, cheers to them for the job that they did.
Very quickly, before I do my cheers and jeers, predictions for today's game.
I think the Jets lose 4-3 in overtime.
Ezzy?
Wow. Do you have that just off the top of your head? I'm going to go Jets win 8-7.
I'll wrap up cheers and jeers, but I'm going to cheer both Gurdeep Ahluwalia and Nabil Kareem, both of whom are TSN Sports Center anchors. They were anchoring a Sports Center earlier this week. I believe it was Tuesday night. And on social media, they were subjected to racist comments. Both of them, I believe, are from are of East Indian origins.
They lots of cowards on Twitter.
Lots of cowards on Twitter. So I'm going to give them my cheer and our show of support because there's no place for that whatsoever.
Nope.
As we've obviously hashed over the last couple of weeks involving Evander Kane's comments and everything else. So cheers to both of those Sports Center personalities and jeers to the racists on social media. That's it for this early Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Anthony Sanfilippo of PhiladelphiaFlyers.com for having just joined us. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. A big thank you to our sponsors, Carbone Coal Fired Pizza, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, David Carr of Monopoly Realty, Elite Sports Injury Clinic, the Linden Market Dental Center, and the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. For producer Remus and producer Tim, for Richard Pollock and for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hustler and Lawless are next.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk. Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.